This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What's up, everybody? Thursday, September 24th. It's Straight Fire. Thank you for taking the time to join me this glorious Thursday morning. We got a great night in sports ahead. Thursday night football. Obviously, Lakers Nuggets game 4. Get the remote ready. Make sure the batteries are working. Listen, I'm not Thursday night football. I'm about to make a case why the game is a big deal. But obviously, Lakers Nuggets is hugely important. Pretty interesting Wednesday night development. We'll get to shortly with the Heat taking down the Celtics. Boy, Heat now up 3-1. We will save the best bet. Best bet lost again. Back-to-back L's for your boy. I got an interesting parlay here for you on Thursday night. And we have a great interview later in the podcast. We're going to do back-to-back NFL deep dives. Today, we're going with John Middlecoff, an NFL scout. You might know him from Cowherd's show. He's awesome. We dig into a lot of games. And then a special guest joining us Friday. You guys definitely know him well. A big name in the football community. But let's start with the biggest story in sports. And yes, it is Dolphins-Jaguars Thursday night football. Normally, this would be a game played in London, right? I mean, this is like a week 7 London, the 7 Eastern kickoff. You got to wake up at like 4 o'clock Pacific time. And I think it's a compelling game for this reason. The Dolphins are already 0-2. They really need this game, folks. Okay, if they can't take down the Jags and Gardner Minshew, week 4, Seattle Seahawks. Just chalk that up as a loss now, okay? Week 5, they travel to San Fran to play the 49ers. We don't know what the 49ers roster will look like, but even with the injuries, San Francisco has way more talent than Miami. So now you're looking at, geez, 0-5? That's definitely in play. I do believe if the Dolphins fall behind big tonight, I'm talking 21-3, even 14-0, I think this is the night we could be seeing the debut of Tua Tagovailoa, the Miami Dolphins' top draft pick in the 2020 draft. Remember, 2 years ago, Baker Mayfield comes in for an injured Tyrod Taylor on Thursday night against my Jets and pulls a rabbit out of the hat, a great comeback win. That was the springboard to a great rookie campaign for Baker Mayfield. And folks, you know this. As soon as you draft a quarterback high in the NFL right now, the clock is ticking. That rookie clock is moving. And we know if you've learned nothing about the NFL in the last 5 years, you've learned this. The easiest way to build a contender is around a rookie quarterback. The rookie quarterback is cheap. You're not paying him $30, $35 million a year. That's when you can build out the defensive end, the cornerback, the wide receiver, and the left tackle. You can build all the important positions while your quarterback is cheap. Listen, we've seen it right now. Kyler Murray in Arizona. Okay, he starts in year 1. Whoa, is this guy ready? This guy was a baseball prospect 2 years ago. Now he's starting week 1. Kyler Murray was competitive. Year 2, Kyler Murray's 2-0. They went out and got him DeAndre Hopkins. And real talk, Kyler Murray is looking like an MVP candidate. We had this in August. If you follow me on social media, I did videos for Fox. Kyler Murray's an MVP candidate already in year 2. Look at Josh Allen, okay? He has a pretty solid start. What do they get him for year 3? Stephon Diggs. Boom. Josh Allen's first 300-yard games come this season thanks to Stephon Diggs. Lamar Jackson, here he is year 3 with the Baltimore Ravens. He was the MVP of the league last year. The Baltimore Ravens spend the second most money on defense in the league. Lamar Jackson's in position to go to a Super Bowl here in year 3 because he's on the rookie deal. I mean, you could go up and down the list of the best teams in the league, folks. Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. I know he got the big quarterback contract hasn't taken effect yet. But he sat out the first year. Now, they did have Alex Smith, and they were a playoff team. But Patrick Mahomes comes in year 2. Boom. MVP of the league. Year 3. Win the Super Bowl. The blueprint is there, and that's why it pains my New York Jets. And I promised you I wouldn't go deep on the Jets at all early in the season. But they're just doing it wrong. This was the offseason they should have spent, but they got the GM in position late. Jets are a dumpster fire, okay? And they're wasting the best times to build around Sam Darnold. I do believe this is the night the Miami Dolphins could unleash Tua. And remember, okay, there were expectations for the Dolphins this year, folks. I was not part of that expectation, but I think Peter King picked them to win the AFC East. I'm serious. Peter King, I know him well. He will come on the podcast. This is a Dolphins team that spent more money than anyone in the NFL on free agency. They stole Byron Jones from the Cowboys because they need another cornerback opposite Xavier Howard. They're very good cornerback. Of course, Byron Jones goes down early last week against the Bills, and what happens? Stephon Diggs just eats, totally dominates the Miami secondary, owned them, had a monster game. Dolphins were, I think, last in the league in sacks last year. So what do? They go get three defensive linemen in free agency. They get Emmanuel Ogba from the Browns. He's a former second-round pick. He's a good player. They get Shaq Lawson from the Buffalo Bills. And they got Kyle Van Noy, who was in the Brian Flores defense in New England. Van Noy had a great year edge rushing for the Patriots last year. Brian Flores knows him. Brian Flores says, let me go get my guy. So a pathetic Dolphins pass rush last year, and they go out and spend lavishly on the defensive line. They go out and Ryan Fitzpatrick led them in rushing yards and rushing touchdowns last year. That's how inept this team was. What do? Boom, let's go get Matt Breida. Let's go pick up Jordan Howard. Now they have some running backs. They had the worst offensive line in the NFL by every metric, and that was why I said they should not start Tua Tagovailoa. I wanted to see what the offensive line could do. So they go get Austin Jackson, middle of the first round in the draft. And they picked up two guys in free agency. They'd start to build the line. They spent lavishly. They had three first-round picks. At the end of the first round, they picked up the cornerback from Auburn. He saw some action against Buffalo. It's clear he's not ready to be a starter yet on the outside. Maybe you tuck him inside as a slot. But it's bottom line is Miami has built around, they've got the foundation ready. All they need is the quarterback, and maybe this is the night we see Tua. Listen, I was never a Gardner Minshew guy. I had the Jacksonville Jaguars having the worst record in the league, having the number one pick. They get Trevor Lawrence. I mean, everybody had that. Everybody said they were going to get Trevor Lawrence. I took it next level and said, what about Trevor and Dabo? I mean, that makes a heck of a lot of sense. And here now the Jacksonville Jaguars 2-0 against the spread. They beat the Colts, and they nearly took down the Titans, who have no defense at all. But I think it's going to hurt Miami. If Gardner Minshew comes out, chews up their defense, and you've got Tua sitting on the bench, like, what do you have to lose? Throw him out there. Let's see if he's ready for action. Your offensive line, I mean, it's looked capable in the first 2 weeks. Ryan Fitzpatrick did them no favors. Three picks in the opener against the Patriots. No turnovers against Buffalo last week. So the line is performing capably. I think it's Tua time, and I think we will see that tonight in Jacksonville. I'm actually saving the pick for this game later in the show. It will be part of the best bet. So I would like to see Tua tonight. Listen, I know the receivers aren't great. Gesicki, the tight end, has looked fantastic. But I'll tell you this. Last week, Ryan Tannehill just totally did whatever he wanted against his Jacksonville secondary. If you want Tua to get some confidence, throw him out there against Jacksonville. This is not a good defense, okay? Tua Tagovailoa, unleash him tonight. All right, a quick word on the Miami Heat taking down the Boston Celtics. Man, I had that game totally wrong. Heat showed up in the first half. Heat held him off at the end. I mean, I'm a little bit surprised Boston's going out like this, but what can you do? But folks, I don't know if you realize this. Boston actually shot better from the field. Boston shot better from three. Boston had more offensive rebounds. Boston had more assists. I mean, Boston, if you just look at the box score, Celtics had them. It was similar to Saints versus the Raiders on Monday Night Football. But of course, two things jump out. The Celtics turnovers. Oh my gosh, 19. I mean, Kemba Walker, their point guard, had zero, but Tatum had six. Smart had four. Jaylen Brown had four. It's what that zone really messes with the Celtics. And the big story coming away from this game, Heat win by three. Tyler Hero. If I asked you at the All-Star break and I said, yo, give me the names of 10 guys who could swing the Eastern Conference, Okay. You would say, okay, Giannis, obviously. You would go Embiid. You would say Ben Simmons. Somebody might even say, well, you know, Chris Middleton could have 35 in a deciding game. You would go through the Boston guys. Kemba, Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they're all capable. They were all top, elite draft picks, high up. You might have said Jimmy Butler. I mean, remember, this is the All-Star break. Toronto, you might have said Pascal Siakam. You might have said Fred VanVleet, who was good in the NBA Finals. You might have said Kyle Lowry. I don't know how far you would have gone before you got to Tyler Hero, a rookie who, by the way, if you listen to Monday's podcast, I went after the NBA awards voting. And then Dante Jones came on Tuesday and had some really smart stuff to say about extend the voting through the conference finals, because you're putting more credibility in a friggin' November and December game when players are load managing than you are the first and second and third round of the playoffs, where nobody gets any accolades for it. And Tyler Hero drops 37 on the Celtics. And it wasn't like a heat check 37. 14 of 21 shooting, 5 of 10 from 3. And this is off the bench in 36 minutes. 37 for a rookie. The staggering stat that they had during the podcast, telecast on Wednesday night. Most points in a playoff game, age 20 or younger. Magic Johnson had 42. That was in the NBA Finals. That is always going to go down. 42 in game 6, filling in at center. Remember, he was a point guard. That's one of the all-time great performances ever. But age 20 or younger, Tyler Hero is now number 2 with 37 points. Derrick Rose, number 3 with 36 points. I was speechless watching Tyler Hero. Now, if you search my tweets, and you're not going to do that because nobody cares, I have been gushing about this kid since the bubble started. You could just see he came in with just that swag and that confidence. He's fearless. And I love watching Tyler Hero play because, I'm telling you, it's not just he's a three-point shooting guy. He is perfect for the modern NBA. And a lot of talk since the Bucks got bounced. Well, I mean, Brian Windhorst came on this podcast early in the podcast and said, you know, you want the list of Giannis potential teams, the Miami Heat's right up there. And then you think, oh, well, who are the Heat going to give up? And obviously, it's the young guys to pair Giannis with a Jimmy Butler-type player. And I'm telling you, I'm sorry, I'm not putting Tyler Hero in any deal for Giannis. And I know Giannis is a two-time MVP. I don't care. We've seen Tyler Hero now in 3 playoff series be explosive as hell because he fits in the modern NBA so well. He can kill you from 3. He can take you off the bounce. He's starting to distribute more. I don't know how closely you're watching these NBA playoffs. Tyler Hero, 5 assists per game in this series, so he can create. This isn't just a shooter. Like, he's doing Jamal Murray-type creating. Tyler Hero, I'm not trading him in any package for Giannis. He's only 20. Second-team all-rookie is laughable. And I don't have an NBA comparison for him yet. A lot of people are saying, hey, listen, if you look at Mike Miller when he came out of Florida, Mike Miller had swag. He could bury threes. And then I look up Mike Miller, like, yeah, this guy was awesome. Shot 40% from deep for his career. And, you know, I think he averaged like 17, 18 a couple seasons. Mike Miller, really good player. Never made an All-Star team. He was a Sixth Man of the Year and Rookie of the Year. Mike Miller did not make one All-Star team. I'm sorry, Tyler Hero looks to me, he has a potential to be an All-NBA player. I don't know if I'm going overboard. Bradley Beal is a very good player. Jamal Murray, we've seen it pop in this bubble. Now, I know people are yelling, well, Jay, he's got Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo on his team. Okay, but Jimmy Butler has been booted from Chicago, and he's been booted from Minnesota, and he's been booted from Philly. I like Jimmy Butler personally. I think he's a top 15 player in the league. But he's not a guy who's going to go out and give you 35-40 in any game you need it. He's going to get to the foul line. He's a tough defensive player. They got Goran Dragic, whose name I butcher all the time. Bam Adebayo is a very nice young player, but I'm telling you guys, I'm not trading Tyler Hero in a package for Giannis. I'm just not doing it. Listen, and I'm not poo-pooing Giannis. We've now seen him 2 years in a row, how you stop him in the playoffs, and the blueprint is there. The Toronto Raptors built a wall at the foul line, and they shut down Giannis. He can't shoot. He's not consistent to shoot the three and beat you. And then what did the Miami Heat do last round? They built a wall at the foul line, shut down Giannis, and they took the Bucks out fairly easily. I'm not saying that you can't game plan Tyler Hero out of the game, but sorry, you don't game plan for a bench player. I mean, Tyler Hero, like, you see a lot of it. He just comes off the curl, and he's burying threes. And the defender's right there. He's just making shots. He's a killer. I was texting a young coach. He was actually Russell Westbrook's backup point guard in high school. And he's a really good, I played pickup ball with him out here, and he does some coaching with my kids. And I'm texting him, I'm like, what's going on? This guy, Tyler Hero, is unstoppable. And he's like, man, this guy, it's like he fell out of the Barry family tree. You know, Brent Barry, John Barry. And then you tack on the confidence and the handle, and he's just a next-level player. Just shooting lights out at 20 years old. Also, it would be remiss of me if I did not mention a friend who will go nameless sent me, yo, have you seen Tyler Hero's girlfriend? And she is an IG model. I'm not going to give out her handle, but she has 7.7 million followers. Her name is Katya Henry, whoever that is. It is, you don't want to look her up in front of your, you know, elementary school age kids, but she's an IG model. She has her share of tattoos, and there's a lot of stuff on there, I'll just say, that you may or may not like. And then it looks like, I didn't give that follow, but I checked the stories, and it's a lot of positive stuff about Tyler Hero. And listen, that's what you get when you're, you know, a 20-year-old superstar living in South Beach. You get an IG model with 7 million followers. So congrats to Tyler Hero. I'm just going to say this. I don't think the Celtics are dead yet. If the Nuggets can come back from down 3-1 against the Jazz and then the Clippers, I'm not going to count the Celtics out. But I will say this. They have a major uphill battle here. Well, that's obvious. But I mean, I don't know how you beat Miami. One game it's Butler. Next game it's Goron. Now Hero's giving you 37. Bam is a double-double machine. It's a tough, but we know Boston has struggled against the bigs, and, you know, they gave up 10 offensive rebounds. They did have 12 of their own. It's just, feel bad for the Celtics. Also, my Lakers-Celtics futures ticket, plus 2,800 to meet in the finals from October. I haven't torn it up yet, but it looks like it's heading to the trash can. All right, next up, we are going to bring in John Middlecoff, former NFL scout. We're going to break down a lot of the great Week 3 games. And hopefully try to make you some money on Sunday.
You know a guy. Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome in John Middlecoff to Straight Fire. John's an interesting fellow. He hosts the Three and Out podcast on the Herd Network. John, what's up, man? How are you?
What's going on, Jason?
Let's start here. So, you know, a lot of listeners to the podcast are like, oh, this guy's a former NFL scout. How the hell do you become an NFL scout? Tell us your story, John.
You know, I was like any other kid in college, business major, and got involved with my athletic program. And one thing led to another, and I became a graduate assistant from there at Fresno State. Once I graduated, I was going to school at Cal Poly. We were like Division I AA. So I got a chance to work at Fresno State in the recruiting office. So they basically put me, a lot of coaches do it on offense or defense and basketball. You become a GA. It's like your first step in a coaching ranks. Luckily, this was 08. Now, recruiting departments are so big in Division I, these openings. But back then, especially at a mid-major, like a non-Power 5, it was unheard of. So it was a really cool opportunity. I did that for a couple years, and we had Ryan Matthews, who was, you know, going to be a top 15 pick. So all the NFL scouts had been coming through, and we were producing NFL players. But when you have a first-round pick, you just get so many guys coming through. And one of my jobs was always setting scouts up with – back then, it was before, like, all the streaming. We had, like, the hard copy of tapes.
Yeah.
And you'd VHS? Set up the VHS tapes. And I was just interacting with them a lot. And for 2 years, getting to know guys. And, you know, Pat Hill had worked for Belichick, and the whole league knew him and liked him. He was producing NFL players. That definitely helped. And I got an opportunity. He knew Andy Reid, and he got me an interview. And I, California guy going to Philly, and it just one thing led to another, and I got hired, and kind of the rest is history.
Wow. I guess maybe we'll start with the Eagles then. Listen, they let me down big time,
John. Me too.
In week two. I loved them in that spot against the Rams. They got their teeth kicked in. I mean, I'm not overly concerned here heading into week three against the Bengals. I feel like there's a good spot for them. But Carson Wentz has problems, and we went in on him in the podcast. And I lived outside Philly for probably about 7 years, so I have a lot of friends there. And they were like, you know, you're spot on. Wentz is struggling. People are legit concerned there about him.
You know what's funny is I had the game on my iPad because I didn't watch it live. I just watched it this morning. I just saw the highlights on the red zone. But to get a feel for a player, you got to watch the whole game. To me, he's like a pitcher. You know, when a pitcher that throws like 98, 100, who can't locate. Because Carson right now, I just watching the game, balls are floating on him. They're going high. They're going low. He's trying to get it into guys, and he's missing. And I think sometimes, for whatever reason, you just get out of rhythm. Because we saw last year right at the end of the season, and I know they were playing their divisional opponents, but he got hot.
Yeah.
And he kind of helped carry them when they had all those injuries. He doesn't look like that player right now. To me, he's one of those guys that can get hot and when he's off, because he doesn't have great touch. You know, that's when you think Carson Wentz right now, you don't think – like Mahomes has really good touch. Yeah. Even Lamar has developed really good touch.
Yes.
Carson is just – he's just off. And they have so many new pieces. You know, Miles Sanders missed that week one. And say this, the Rams are good, right? I mean, the Rams just have a lot of swag. They're rolling right now. They got to be – you know, we talk about all these teams in the NFL that are just – ranking them 1 through 5 or whatever. People aren't talking about the Rams. I mean, I'm watching them. They're rolling. So that was – maybe he ran into a little bit of a buzzsaw, but he's playing the Bengals. Their defense is borderline atrocious. If he can't get right this game and they can't win probably by 10-plus, then maybe the Eagles are in big trouble.
Let me ask you about Burrow. We saw him on Thursday night. He gets extra rest coming to Philly. I was kind of impressed. I know he threw the ball 61 times, but just the toughness in the pocket against unrelenting pressure. The Eagles defense is going to be angry because Goff embarrassed them.
Yeah, he did.
I'm sure you watch a game like everything was wide open for Goff. I mean, the Eagles defense was so off balance. It feels like a tough spot for Burrow.
Yeah, it does. And again, he's not really rolling with much. I mean, I don't know if AJ Green is even 80% of what he once was. Now, Joe Mixon's a good player, but to me, that's about all he's got.
Tyler Boyd?
Yeah, he's solid. You got to give Joe Burrow credit. I think sometimes when you're that good in college, you never know how it's going to translate. And you watch him on that Thursday night game, even though he didn't win, it was like, wow, this looks like an NFL quarterback. No fans in Philly this weekend, right? But like you said, the Eagles are going to be pissed. But how good is their defense? Like, I mean, you can be mad, but if you just don't have the horses, it's not – not, you don't just turn into the 85 Bears, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're healthy. That's the problem. Like, everybody came back on the line this week. The secondary's healthy.
They lack speed at linebacker. They kind of look slow. Now, the one thing is that Goff, or excuse me, the McVay, and Zach Taylor's going to do this. That offense is predicated on running the ball, then play action, then those throwback plays. So they get you with a bunch of misdirection. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have a lot of team speed, especially at linebacker, when you're playing these teams that throws to the tight end, especially throws to the running back, it can expose you. And clearly the Rams, what Higbee have, 3 touchdowns?
Yeah.
So, and they're hitting them like, you know, on play action, throwback plays where a linebacker's chasing them. I would imagine Zach Taylor's going to try to replicate some of those plays. Yeah,
that's a great note. Zach Taylor is a McVay guy.
Yeah.
That actually could help the Eagles, though. They've just seen
100%
everything.
And now more and more, I mean, Kyle, McVay, the Gruden, like all these guys are running this zone scheme, throw into the tight end, play action, boots. I think that's – and as these guys keep getting jobs, it's not going to slow down, right, as long as Kyle and McVay keep having success. It's really going to be – that's going to be the number one offense in the league that everyone runs. So it's going to be easier to prepare because you're going to see it countless times throughout the season.
So let's talk about the Rams again. Now, they in a weekend with some great games, John, Rams-Bills is kind of
that's
maybe
good.
The best 1 p.m. game. I mean, 2-0, both of them. I think in DVOA from Football Outsiders, Rams are actually the better team.
Yeah.
I think they're 4th and Bills are 5th or something. But the Bills are favored here by 2.5. Any thoughts on this game? The Rams do have the tough travel, having left Philly to go home and then coming back to Buffalo. But any thoughts?
They did fly home.
Yeah. I know they wanted to stay, but due
it's
to COVID.
Tough. It's tough. Yeah. The Niners went to West Virginia.
Yeah.
So it's a weird time. My one thing with Buffalo is obviously they played 2 easy opponents to start off the season. But I think we all acknowledge they were a playoff team last year. They're going to be a playoff team this year. Mm-hmm. We'll see with the Patriots, you know, who wins that division. I think it's fair to say now that Cam's good, Buffalo's probably still the slight favorite, but I don't know. We got to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
To me, Josh Allen, like, we're not going to judge him on how he plays against the Dolphins, how he plays against the Jets. He's going to be judged in games like this. And this is going to be a game with a lot of eyeballs on it. And now, I don't think the Rams' defense is that great. They have two exceptional players. Mm-hmm. And Michael Brockers is solid. But they got a lot of guys that a lot of teams are going to go after. And I would avoid, and I would imagine that Jalen Ramsey is going to chase 14 everywhere he goes.
So, well, and also, remember, Jalen Ramsey's the guy, I think, who said Josh Allen was trash to GQ.
Good point.
I wonder if there's going to be some trash talk going on in the game.
To me, there's just a big game for the Bills. Like, I think we acknowledge the Rams, even their worst season under McVay last year, they were 9-7, and this year they would have been in the playoffs under the new format. But this is a huge game for the Bills to kind of assert themselves, DVOA ranking, whatever, but just to prove themselves, like, we're a legit – Super Bowl contender, right? Like, we are going to be a team to be messed with in the postseason. You win games like this. To me, the line, like, I don't quite understand why you're still getting 3 points with no home field, no crowd. Yeah. I mean, you watch these games, it's just mano a mano. There's no sound in terms of the communication. I saw Peyton Manning said on the Megacast, like, a huge thing about playing on the road in the NFL is just not being able to communicate. Well, that's not the problem now. So it's kind of just like a glorified – I mean, it's not a scrimmage because they're playing – it's a game. But in terms of the noise and the extra 80,000 people – and Buffalo is a crazy place. So
it is,
I would say this is a – to me, this should be a pick 'em. And I would lean Buffalo just based on the travel. But the Rams, to me, have been better through the first two games.
I just got to ask about Josh Allen. I tweeted out a picture of him missing that receiver against the Jets when there was nobody within 5 yards in the end zone. I'm sure you saw the highlight. And
they were blowing him out, though, in that game. I mean, he missed that throw. It was an easy throw.
But Bills fans are so sensitive about Josh Allen. I know he just had two 300-yard games, 400-yard game against Miami. And he has Diggs. I haven't loved what I've seen from the running game. Is it a problem that I'm still a little bit skeptical?
Yeah, well, he's just not a pinpoint accurate guy. Right. You know, he is going to miss some layup throws. and also, when he misses, it'd be the equivalent of like throwing the ball over the backboard or something, like a Shaq free throw. You're like, what did I just watch? But he's also going to make some of the – like when he does hit Diggs on a 70-yard bomb or – you know, rolling to his right, throwing back across his body, making a throw that him and Mahomes can make. He does have that in the bag. And I know I talked to Sean McDermott at the Combine, and he said last year coming into the season, everyone said he just sucked. He couldn't throw short, intermediate, or deep. And he became a good short, intermediate passer. Right. Well, then the knock this year was like, he can't throw deep. Well, they add Diggs. So I think that's just, can he consistently do that? Because they're going to take away everything short, right, and make him beat you 15 yards because I don't think you can do it. And if he proves he can do that, you could argue they could play with the Chiefs if he can be accurate on every level just because of how talented he is, right? But as of right now, that's not who he is.
Defense isn't quite as good as we thought. I mean,
pass rush is just like, who is that? They don't have a Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald, but we know they're physical and they tackle well. To me, their defense is more than good enough. It more falls to me on the quarterback.
Let's go to Texans Steelers. John, I don't know, man. I know this is the spot for the Texans to get right. They've played the two best teams in the league. Pittsburgh hasn't been able to blow out the Giants or really put away Jeff Driscoll. Talk me out of the Steelers here. I mean, this is a great defensive line against a guy who's been sacked 8 times. This is a great secondary and no Will Fuller, apparently, for the Texans. I mean, the Texas defense stinks. John, what?
Well, and are we sure their offense is that good? You know, I mean, missing DeAndre Hopkins is huge.
Yeah.
Their wide receivers, we knew two or three of them were going to get hurt. Just look at their resumes. I was thinking about this yesterday because the Dolphins have their pick. Sometimes when you do, like, you know, those multiple first-round picks, sometimes it blows up on you, and then you have a 4 or 5 win season, and all of a sudden that pick is pick 8, and that team is – you know, doing cartwheels in their offices. Like, we just got an incredible – what if the Texans just – this is a year that they win 5 games? They're just not very good. They run into a buzzsaw of their division's a lot better, right? The Titans we know are solid. The Colts are solid. The Jags are going to be no pushover by any means. And just this start that the Texans – like, to me, it's clear. Like, this should be a 7-point line. The Steelers arguably had the best defense in the league.
Yeah.
Roethlisberger, he didn't play all last season, and he's old. It's going to take some time, but he's still played pretty solid. I mean, even last week, like Denver to me is a better team than Houston. Now, I know Driscoll came in, but you just watch them, like, they got weapons everywhere. They still got talent on defense, even without Von Miller. And Vic Fangio is just a solid coach. I think there's so much around Bill O'Brien. You got this elephant in the room now. They got rid of DeAndre Hopkins, and they don't really know what they're doing personnel-wise. And then the way the schedule set up, I love the Steelers in this game.
Yeah. So let me ask you, as a scout, right? So Jeff Driscoll, there was no tape on him from the Denver offense last week. And they sacked him six times, but he was able to move the football in the second half. So now he comes in, the Pittsburgh Steelers. I guess I should pivot to the Jeff Driscoll game. He's hosting Tampa Bay, Denver, Tampa.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at Tampa, it's like, okay, we saw Driscoll in the second half. We have some tape on him. How much does that impact a guy like Jeff Driscoll versus the defense?
Yeah, the offense is the offense, just in terms, like, I don't think they're going to change the scheme for their backup quarterback. Part of the reason why you get a backup quarterback is that you don't have much transition if something happens, because it's the one position, like with a defensive lineman, you have eight of them. Right, an offensive line. You never change.
But with San Francisco does it.
Yeah, quarterback people freak out. Yeah, Niners have a lot. They're going to run what Pat Shurmur runs, right? Technically, they want to run the football. That's why they signed Melvin Gordon. They had Phillip Lindsay's been banged up. They got all these weapons. Like, that's to me why Jeff Driscoll does have a chance to succeed. But I just think you can watch what they've done the first two games. They're going to do that again. Maybe go back to just some preseason games or when he's played before, anything that he does well that they'll try to implement. But at the end of the day, if you're Tampa, you just think, we're way better than him. We're going to kick his ass.
I mean, Tampa's – I hate to say this early in the week, but they're my favorite pick here. I mean, no Cortland Sutton, no Drew Locke. Lindsley, as you said, it looks like he's out with the toe.
Turf toe, yeah.
A.J. Bouye out at cornerback. And the Bucs, I mean, John, if you watch that game, like, they dropped seven passes. LeShady McCoy dropped a touchdown. They should have destroyed the Panthers. And it wasn't a destruction, so I know Denver at altitude supposed to have an edge, but I think Tampa crushes them. They're just getting started, aren't they?
Yeah, to me, with Brady making the transition, a place that he'd been for, you know, two decades, but really him and Josh had been back together once he got fired in Denver for a decade, there was going to be a transitional period, and they started against New Orleans that had been together forever. Like, people freaked out about that game. Tom is old. So it's like, oh, he's old. Yeah, he is 43. So it's just going to take some time. He has the weapons. Bruce Arians' resume speaks for itself. To me, like last week, this is a get-right game. That game, like you said, ton of drop balls. They're going to be a major factor. And the more you watch the Saints, you're like, well, if Tampa starts getting their mojo, they have a better defense than the Saints, right? In theory, right? If they stay healthy, Todd Bowles, just how relentless they are. How are the Broncos going to score this week? You know, it's going to be tough, especially if you can. Like, one thing, when he got a little confidence last week, Driscoll, you hit a couple passes. He hit, like, kind of a lucky wheel route that ended up being a touchdown. If you don't allow a backup quarterback to get some confidence early in a game, it can snowball. Because with a starting quarterback, you get ups, you go down, like, three and outs, whatever. You don't get phased. With a backup, the elephant in the room is like, does this guy suck? And then all of a sudden you get down like 10, 14 points. It's much harder to dig yourself out of a hole when you're backup quarterback than your starting quarterback.
All right, let's get to the two best games. We'll start with, let's go Packers-Saints, okay? This is, nobody really wants to take the Saints here. Everybody's loving the Packers, the general public. But, John, I think this is a great spot for the Saints. Everybody just watched them on the Island game Monday night. And, you know, they don't really look at the box score. The Saints average like 7.5 yards per play. I know there was some garbage time at the end. But
they have a bunch of drops in that game. There were some drops.
And the penalties just killed them. I think 10 for a buck 29. I kind of like the Saints going home, and I think the Packers a little bit overvalued. Am I wrong here?
My one takeaway is, and I know he's played the Lions and he played the Vikings, everyone's asking, like, Russell Wilson, and I love Russell Wilson. I would say that Aaron Rodgers has been every bit as good. I mean, Aaron Rodgers looks like peak 2013, 2014 form. Again, opponent's not great, but he is rolling right now. And it's pretty clear, you know, in that first game, right, the Saints got they had a pick six. So it's like it hasn't all been their offense.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I agree with Coward that Drew Brees is off. Something's just – he's not the same as he once was. And Michael Thomas, I think it's fair to assume he probably won't play this week.
What about Devontae Adams? Have you heard anything?
Yeah, well, I read today that his hamstring's not that bad. It's not like a severe hamstring pull. Do they need Devontae Adams to beat the Saints? But I'm with you. Just as a gambling standpoint, everyone's going to bet on the Packers. There is definitely value with the Saints. But just the eye test last week, like at Monday night, the Raiders' defense is not good. They have no pass rush. Their corners can't cover. Their linebackers are okay. They have really like one impactful defensive player, and they just couldn't score points. Yeah, and the one thing with the Packers is they score points.
Yeah, you got to keep up. I mean, it was 17-7 Saints like late second quarter, and then I think that's when the penalties helped the Raiders get the touchdown, and then Drew Brees with a bad pick, like you said, Brees off. Now listen, he's 41. I mean,
He's old. The old guys should not be this good at football.
I agree. Yeah, I've never seen this historically. All right, so the game of the week, John. Chiefs Ravens, and this is weird because the Ravens are favored by 3.5. And again, this I feel like it's an overreaction to Mahomes and Andy Reid sputtering a divisional game, a rivalry game, and you know they just did not look sharp. And truthfully, Mahomes has not looked great. Now I had heard from somebody that the Chiefs have eased up the offense and they're not sending guys deep on the fly routes because they're worried about the hamstring injuries early in the year. Yeah. They're not bombing 50-yard passes early. I don't know. Any thoughts on what you've seen from the Chiefs? Because Patrick Mahomes has kind of been bottled up.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put much. That's a good little nugget, if true. I got to text someone with the Chiefs. I'd be genius if that's what they're doing. Because what do they have to prove early in the season, right?
Yeah.
They have nothing
to
prove.
You can't lose Tyreek Hill for like 6 weeks. You don't want that.
The Ravens have something to prove. Because last year when they played the Chiefs, the score was actually much closer in the game than I watched. Because the Chiefs kicked their butt. And Lamar got a bunch of garbage time yards and points at the I think in the fourth quarter, if I remember correctly. To me, this game should at worst be a pick 'em. Like, especially, again, this is in Baltimore, right? No fans. Yeah. So I don't understand this automatic 3-point when the Chiefs, if they have to win a game, and this, again, they don't have much to prove here. This, to me, is much bigger psychologically for Lamar. So if you play this team again, which I think we would all sign up for right now is the AFC championship game, Lamar is going to have to beat them with his arm. Like, maybe he runs around in this game and has a bunch of yards on the ground. Like, as we know, the Ravens are probably going to be the 1 or 2 seed a lock again, right? Probably right there with the Chiefs. And maybe not. Chiefs might not even care that much. Now, this year, because the 1 seed is the only team that gets the bye, maybe they will when push comes to shove at the end of the season. But I don't have, like there's nothing the Ravens can do for me in the regular season to make me change my mind on. I've seen them in the playoffs now 2 years in a row. You don't run around like that. The teams take it away, and they make you beat you with his arm. And he hasn't been able to do that. Now, I'll give Lamar credit. He keeps getting better. So I would say if Lamar can throw for 3 or 4 touchdowns on the Chiefs, running aside, you would feel very good about when they play him again in the playoffs. Like, that's something that would translate. But if he lights him up running, it's like, well, we know that doesn't happen when the games matter. So I don't even know what to make of this game.
I mean, the Chargers ran all over the Chiefs, I believe. And even the Texans early in the opener – it looked like they had some things going on the ground and that was quickly snuffed out and they couldn't, you know, protect Watson when he dropped back. But I don't know if the Ravens are able to run for 200 yards like they were against Houston last week. Are the Chiefs in trouble? We know keep away works.
I would say, well, like last year though, remember how good the Chiefs defense was the last like 5 or 6 weeks. They really got on. They looked like the previous year. And then that last month of the season, I think even the last 2 months of the season, they had one of the best scoring defense in the league, and then it clearly translated to the playoffs, even though they got down by a bunch in a lot of these games. Yeah. I don't think they would be able to do that again, and they clearly don't want to get down in these games. But there's not a guy that I would bet against in a big game than Patrick Mahomes. And I'm not – that is not a regular season game. Like, he'll lose some regular season games. He'll look like he did last year in some regular season games. Yeah. He now has enough of a resume where we don't even – it doesn't even mean anything to me.
All right, John, last question, not pertaining to a game. I haven't prepped you with this. I didn't tell you it was coming. When the Jets fire Adam Gase, any thoughts as to, I mean, it's going to be the third coach in 4 years for my guy Sam Darnold. As a longtime Jets fan, it pains me. I was hoping Gase would work out.
They suck.
I mean, they're terrible. It's unwatchable, honestly. Yes, they have no receivers. Although Becton's look great on the offensive line.
Yeah, he's a stud.
But where do you go to get a coach for Darnold? Or do you say, we want to interview coaches because Darnold's our guy? Obviously, it becomes difficult if they get the number one pick and Lawrence and Fields are there. But if you're a Jets fan, just give me a sliver of hope.
I asked a good buddy that worked with Joe Douglas, and I don't know him. I said, what type coach would he want? Like, what's his type guy? And he said, think John Harbaugh. You know, I mean, that's who he worked with in Baltimore. He just said, think old school football toughness. And I don't think he will be caught up. Like, I think recently we've seen a lot of these hires that have been like, we want this flashy offensive toy. That's not what he thinks. And if you look at already his personnel moves, look, the star left tackle. You know, right. When you look at his history in Philly, the type of players that they acquired when he was, you know, running it with Howie Roseman there and coming from Baltimore, I think he has more of an old school feel. So, like, you know, like Arians, Zimmers. Now, those guys don't exist, but I don't think he's just going to sign, like, or attempt to hire McVay's right-hand guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think that most humans, the way we do it, when you have a young quarterback, you just go, who's the hottest offensive mind? Because that's just the easiest thing to say.
Right.
I don't necessarily think that's automatic. And he's even friends with – like, part of the reason this we thought it might work, right, he knew Gase. To me, in fairness to Gase – and I don't follow the Jets on a daily basis like some diehard fan. Their team has by far the worst roster in the NFL.
Yes.
Like, even if you gave Kyle Shanahan and McVay that roster, they wouldn't win that. They'd be 0-2 still.
And here, you mentioned the draft pick earlier. If the Texans are awful, and I forget who has their pick in the first, but
Miami from the Tunsil trade.
So the Jets have Seattle's from the Jamal Adams deal. And I went into the season like, oh, well, maybe if Seattle stinks and you know, they got a new offensive line in Seattle. Now, their defense is not great.
But I think it's fair to say that minimum they're 10-6, right?
Worst case. Minimum. Yeah. Unless Russ goes down.
But I think like part of being such a crappy team like the Jets are, you got four first-rounders now the next 2 years, right? That's not – you got picks. You got ammo. And even like let's say you improve next year, maybe the following year a player becomes available. Like Minnesota this year, they gave up 22 for Diggs. You can always use one of those picks in the 20s just to get a player, which, you know, you don't always have to use the pick on a draft pick. You can maybe in a year you think you're like closer to be an 8-8 team, get Sam Darnold some help and go get a star wide receiver. Cause they're a little like NBA players, right? Sometimes they want out.
Yeah.
Become available with contract needs. And
okay. I can dig that. I need something to get excited about, John.
There's not a team farther away from just being average than them right now. And even even a diehard Jets fan, I think we all agree, right? You just watch that team, you're like, beside the left tackle, who is a monster, and the quarterback is talented, but what can you do if you have no one to throw to and no run game? I love Frank Gore. Yeah. Frank Gore is 90 years old. I mean,
All right, John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast on the Herd Podcast Network. John, thanks a lot, man. Great stuff.
See you, buddy.
The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
Best bet time. Took an L on Wednesday. Celtics did not deliver. They didn't even win the damn game. 19-12-2. Still profitable. Still, in the plus above 60%. 57 is about the magic number. So a little 2-game losing streak. And I'm going to give out 3 on Friday's podcast, obviously NFL games. I haven't looked at the college slate yet. The college slate gets better this weekend, but folks, so many games are canceled. It's tough for me to get like too excited. I got to wait till like Saturday morning to make sure the games are happening. So best bet for Thursday night, I'm going with a parlay, okay? $100 on this will win you, looks like about $165. I'm going with the Miami Dolphins getting 3 points in Jacksonville, parlayed with the Lakers on the money line. Now, Lakers let me down on Tuesday night, and I cannot see a way that they lose game 4. And you can go ahead and just crush me on social media all you want if the Lakers go down in game 4. Yeah, I would be shocked, okay? There's an article out there taking shots at LeBron, JaVale, Dwight, and AD, you know they heard about it from the coaching staff, from fans, maybe from their family members. They got punked by Jokic in game 4. I mean, they couldn't get a rebound. He out-rebounded all of them. He punked them. And I assume the Lakers will come out with a hardcore mindset that we are going to beat that ass. We are coming back. Y'all put a clown suit on us. We nearly had the comeback against you. And I expect a max effort I would keep an eye on this Caruso injury. I don't know how serious it is. We'll see. Last I saw, they were going to do an MRI. We'll see. Listen, Danny Green, you're going to have to show up. I don't know if this is a Deion Waiters game, but Kuzma is going to need to show up. And I like the Lakers on the money line. I don't know if they'll be able to cover 6.5. But Lakers on the money line is one half, and the other half is the Miami Dolphins. And, folks, I am absolutely sorry that I'm giving you a team that is 0-2. And the reason I like the Dolphins here, and this is goes back to the line that I'll repeat throughout the podcast as we do football gambling. The professional gamblers play numbers. They don't play teams. And if this is 2.5, if you, you know, by the time you listen to this podcast, if you wait until mid-morning, if you wait until the afternoon, I don't think Dolphins 3 will be there, okay? I think this will go down to 2.5 because the professional gamblers are going to say, hold up, you're telling me the Jacksonville Jaguars, who 2 weeks ago, before week one, the Jags were supposed to be the worst team in the NFL. They had the lowest win total. They were supposed to be tanking. And listen, the front office did set up them up to tank. If you want to, I know the players aren't tanking, the coaching staff ain't tanking, but the front office tore it down so they could get a number one pick. That's what they're doing. You're telling me now, in week three, they're favored over somebody? Really? By three? Jacksonville favored. So I do believe this line will come down. Listen, I don't know if it's going to crater to pick them. Gardner Minshew has looked sharp. I have my man DJ Shark. Baby Shark. No, I did not just do that. DJ Shark in my fantasy team. He came through in week one. Week two, he was kind of good. But I need bigger numbers, DJ. We know the Miami Dolphins defense is not very good. It smells like a shootout to me. If I was a greedy gambler, I would do a Lakers money line, Dolphins plus +3, and give me the over. But I'm not going there. I'm not that confident in Ryan Fitzpatrick. Though, if Tua comes in, who knows? All bets are off. But I like the Dolphins to cover the number here. Fitzpatrick is known as a backdoor king covering the spread. Last year, they had a good run there at the end of the season covering. So there's your best bet for Thursday night. Get the remote ready. Lakers money line. Dolphins plus +3. We'll talk to you Friday.